Warm weather this week might have a few people thinking about spring, which is still a couple of months away. Spring is when gardening starts in earnest, but there are things people planning gardens for this year can be doing now in the so-called dead of winter. Lynn Kunzman is a member of Jackson County Master Gardeners. She's joined us regularly since last growing season to answer our many questions about gardening. We visit her once a month now, and just to keep her and you on your toes, we moved her day and time slot this month. Lynn Kunzman, thanks for rolling with the changes. Lynn Kunzman needs to be turned up. There we go. There you are. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. What are you up to these days? I mean, what kinds of gardening things do you do at this point of the year as well-versed as you are?
Right. So, you can always spend time, once the sun is out and it's warm in the afternoon, you know, kind of prepping garden beds. That's getting them ready. We're checking on the cover crops that are there. But I have right now, I have Chinese cabbage and lettuce and spinach, cilantro, peas, different spring greens started in my greenhouse so that once the weather really warms in a few weeks, you know, we start getting that nice kind of early spring warm afternoons or warmer afternoons, I can pop those into the ground. Because they're plants that can tolerate frost, so things like kale and all your cold crops, so cabbage, lettuce, parsley, those are all things you can start now in pots in a, you know, a sunny window or a little greenhouse if you have a little portable greenhouse. And it says you can direct sow peas, but my experience with that here in the valley, or at least in my yard, where I don't spray or anything, and I have earwigs and slugs living in my garden. That's just part of the ecological process. That's right. They're part of the family. Well, and birds that visit the yard. If I try to direct sow something like beans or peas in my yard, either the earwigs will chop them off as they emerge, or the birds will come through, dig them up, and eat them. So I, I always start those plants in cell packs, so that they're, you know, a few inches tall when I put them out, and then those problems are solved. They're not bothered. So you can actually start peas in cell packs rather than, you know, going down to the nursery and buying them later in the season. So that's what I've got going in my greenhouse right now. And I've been doing a little pruning of fruit trees, that kind of stuff.
I was going to ask specifically about that because I've often wondered about this, having been through several pruning cycles on our apple tree. Is there a particular best time? Is there a sweet spot of the cold season for pruning fruit trees?
If you're going to do it in winter, you want to wait until they're fully dormant. So this is the time, and I don't know if, you know, January is better than February or November or December, but you want to make sure that all the leaves are off and the trees have really kind of gone to sleep for the year if you're doing that. A lot of our fruit trees we can summer prune as well, so that's kind of a newer thing in gardening. So a lot of people do summer pruning. That's a whole different thing. There's a great, there are great pamphlets on that extension catalog website that explain for each particular type of fruit tree that you might have what the pruning protocols are and when to do them, as well as the spray protocols for disease and pests and that stuff. So those are all available free online for folks.
Okay.
You can get those. And it is the time of year to do dormant spraying.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, most people know I don't do a lot of spraying in my yard, but dormant spraying of fruit trees, I do, because those are organic horticultural sprays or sulfur sprays or copper sprays that actually prevent some of those bacterial diseases that can affect our, you know, things like blight that can affect our fruit trees and cause damage.
Are blights bacterial? I never even stopped to think about that.
Blights are, there are bacterial blights. There are fungal infections that can happen. So copper and sulfur are the things that kind of deal with those two issues.
And I noticed that copper, sulfur, and then I'm looking at the January and the food garden checklist from the Extension Service, and then a spray afterward with a horticultural oil?
It's called a dormant spray. It's an oil. What that does is it actually coats the eggs of any insects that are laying on your fruit trees. And if you don't want things boring into your trees or boring into your fruit or those kinds of things, it's just a kind of a smothering situation. And of course, you want to keep it up on the tree, not on the ground where you might have stuff overwintering, little bees that might be down there overwintering at the base of the tree and stuff. But the good thing about doing winter spraying and dormant spraying, when the trees have gone to sleep, when everything has gone to sleep, those insects that are sheltering underground are going to be safe from that, because these things will break down in the environment, a few days to weeks after you spray them and before those beneficial insects emerge. So it's a balancing act. And so if you really don't want to spray in your yard, sometimes it's best not to plant fruit trees, because they are an exotic species. They're imported, and they do need to be maintained. So you're not spreading disease and infestations to other people in the neighborhood or the valley in general. So anyway, those things should happen. And like I said, those sprays are organic, so they will break down. They are not long-term harmful in the environment.
Lynn Kunstman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Once again, a member of Jackson County Master Gardeners, here with her monthly visit to kind of talk us through gardening for those of us who are novices or even further along than that. We welcome your questions and comments by phone at 800-838-3760. The email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I'm not ready to move off fruit trees completely yet. I've always wondered about the aggressiveness of pruning, because, I feel guilty taking big limbs off of the apple tree, but then I go past the orchards and I look at the pear trees, and they seem like they have this large center core with a bunch of little guys coming out of them.
Right, absolutely. That's called, that's called agricultural pruning. You prune low to get multiple branches coming out so that you have a kind of a vase or U-shaped tree with sun, so that sunlight can get into the center to ripen all the fruit on those, 3 to 5 kind of main branches that come out. Pruning is an important part of being able to get a fruit crop. You can actually take down, in the summer, oftentimes they'll tell you, take down a third of the wood in your tree. So, I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination on horticultural pruning of fruit trees, but there are incredible information pamphlets about that on the Extension site. So people should... First thing everybody should do is go to that extension catalog and search for the topic they're interested in. And you can find information on almost any gardening question you have. And it's all free. It's a great resource.
I noticed that that one of the aspects of being a master gardener is not just to know how to do the work, but also to know where to send people to find out more about it.
Exactly. Oh, no, you have to. And, I spend a lot of time posting stuff on Facebook. And in all these pages that I follow and visit, people are, they'll show a picture of a plant and they'll go, "What is it? And how can I do this?" And I'm thinking, "Oh, why don't you go Google that before you ask the question? Do a little research, see if you can find the answer, and then just post it to the general, world." Because you're more likely, if you go to an EDU extension site, you're going to get science-based information that is, it's got a lot of research behind it. It's best practice, current best practice. And if you're just asking the public in general, people can give you whatever information is hanging around in their heads. That's not research. That's not necessarily correct. We want you to have correct, current information. And so, yes, we refer people to these sites all the time. And if people call, like, our plant clinic with questions, those people that work in the plant clinic are going to research the answer to your problem, and they're going to send you links to that important science-based information.
We still have the plant clinic link on our website at jeffexchange.org, along with the links to Master Gardeners for Oregon State University and on the California side for the UC Davis Extension Service as well.
Right.
So we have lots of places for people to launch from the website as well. I'm just curious, though, over the course of the time that you've been involved in Master Gardening, Lynn, and I'm not asking the actual time frame here, how much have things changed? I mean, you know, a lot of procedures have been known for centuries, you know, millennia, but
right.
Have a few things gotten tweaked and changed over the course of your time in the game?
You know, they're always updating stuff, and I've been a user of the Extension Service since I was in my 20s is when I first, you know, found out about it and started accessing that information. It was harder to do then because you had to go and get a hard copy of a pamphlet somewhere. Mm-hmm. But you know, they're always updating the information. And so it's always the most current research, the most current practice. You know, they used to recommend back in the day, you know, DDT was one of the things that before it was banned, you know, before we had the research that showed it was a bad ombre. So those things, all of those sorts of, certainly in terms of pesticides and those kinds of things, that stuff is always being updated on the sites. So in terms of my own personal stuff, what I have seen most recently that is very exciting to me is that now in Oregon, there is a huge focus on native plants and pollinator health. And so there are these terrific pamphlets, you know, I think I've got one in the link to you, Enhancing Urban and Suburban Landscapes to Protect Pollinators. There's an insect apocalypse occurring. Mm-hmm. And finally, Extension is starting to address that. So I see that as a real positive trend, you know, and all science-based, very, really well-researched. So, yeah, there have been a lot of changes.
Lynn Kunstman, our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange, Jackson County Master Gardener and an answerer of our questions once a month at the moment for gardening. We'll go back up to weekly if Lynn allows as we get into growing season. You can join us now at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Kalina and Ashland emails, would this be a good time to prepare compost for use in the spring? Also, would you recommend a portable greenhouse during the summer if I have a limited sun in my yard? I also want a way to protect my plants from automatic sprinklers, and I figured a little portable greenhouse would do double duty. I rent my home, so I can't dig, but I really want to start a container garden. That again from Kalina in Ashland.
Yeah, so you know you can compost anytime as long as you have a container to keep it in, and you know a way to keep it balanced correctly. So you have one part nitrogen, some kind of green compost with six parts of carbon, like dry leaves or straw or something like that. So you keep it hot and keep it mixed, keep it cooking. It takes about 90 days, mm-hmm. Even if you're being really vigilant, to get it actually composted all the way down. So, and if you're just letting it cold compost, it takes way longer than that. But a small greenhouse will work for spring vegetables here in the valley. I do not keep anything in my greenhouse, any summer vegetables in my greenhouse during the summer. It just gets too blazing hot mm-hmm. here in the valley. If you have 90 degree temperatures outside, our greenhouses over at Extension can get up to 120 degrees inside. Even with the windows open and ventilation running, it gets really, really hot. So I would hesitate to tell, you know, gardeners to try and grow summer vegetables. You can grow your summer vegetables in containers, mm-hmm. but you could grow your spring and fall vegetables in a small greenhouse. Mm-hmm. That would work perfectly.
So if it sounds like what she's describing is some limits on solar access, in that kind of situation, would a greenhouse speed things up, or is that still a no-go just because of the heat?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the problem with any kind of vegetable, and that goes for spring or summer, they need at least, summer vegetables need more sun. They need more hours of sun, at least 8 hours a day. spring vegetables can get by, spring and fall vegetables, the shoulder season vegetables can get by on maybe six. But if you have less than that, you're not going to have much success at all.
All right, so the greenhouse isn't going to get you past the deficit of sunlight. Yeah,
that's right. It's not going to. Yeah, it doesn't add light for you. The things have to have direct sunlight. For photosynthesis and growth, they need good direct sunlight.
I noticed at one of the other places that I go to look for ideas for questions, suggested to recycle your Christmas tree. Do you have a best practice there that you recommend for the people who, I know by now it's probably sitting at the curb, but.
Right, yeah. Well, we used to, when we got trees, we used to chop them up and put them in the compost pile, and we have a chipper shredder and we shred stuff, so we've shredded Christmas trees before. We have just chopped them and put the boughs into the compost pile. Once the needles are gone, then chop up the branches, to make them part of the compost. Or if you have a brush pile somewhere, if you have property, I recommend people put their Christmas trees out on the brush pile because they provide great winter cover for birds. And brush piles are a really important actual habitat for wildlife to shelter in and get protection in the winter. Christmas trees on the brush pile is a great way to go.
Yeah, we have one of those going too, and I must admit when I throw things on it, I'm a little flinchy because I'm not sure if something's living in there or it's going to skitter suddenly, but okay, good place to put the rest of your Christmas
tree. Yeah, they'll come back, Yeah, they know where they live, and so they'll run away and then they'll return, but yeah.
Okay, I'll make sure we provide links to the stuff we talked about here today, particularly what you were talking about with the insect apocalypse and the fact that we need to take care of pollinators in the Rogue Valley. So always something to talk about with Lynn Kuntz in our gardening segment. She'll be back in a month. And thanks again for rolling with the changes and letting us put you in an earlier time slot on a different day.
Not a problem at all.
Okay. Lynn Kuntzman will come back and join us once again next month. Lynn, thanks again.